Blog Talk Radio.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Welcome to another episode of The Porch. We started off a little late this evening, but I'm glad that if you stayed tuned, you persevered and wanted to get all this good information, man, I appreciate that. Please, let me let you know that. Listen, man, the revolution will not be televised, and it cannot begin without the information first. You have a right to remain silent, but I do not recommend it. I'm broadcasting live. We still not in the studios of Africa as of yet. They still doing renovations. If you want to check on the renovations of the studio, you can go follow the Fabulous Moonshine Brown on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's his handle. You can follow him. He'll give you a step-by-step, you know, day-by-day update as to how the studio is going. I'm pretty sure it's going to be magnificent once everything is done. So, you know, right now, each and every week, I'll be in location, bouncing place to place. You know, if I'm interviewing a guest, perhaps be at their spot or whatever the case may be. But no guests this week, so I'm where it all began. Right now, I'm in Scott Lake, where I grew up at, the neighborhood, you know, where the foundation was laid. So I'm in Scott Lake this evening broadcasting the show. So it should be interesting, you know, feel the energy from the roots here. If you want to call in, the number, as always, is 323-792-3072. Once again, the number here is 323-792-3072. If you enjoy the show and you want to critique it, give your opinion on anything, send us an email at theporchfellas@yahoo.com. Follow us on Instagram, the_porch_reloaded. Follow us on Facebook at The Porch Fellas. And on Facebook, that's where you can get all your information. Tomorrow is Friday, of course, so you know we always post something for Free Your Mind Friday. Follow the fan page, The Porch Reloaded, Rocket Chair Rebels, that's the fan page. And if you just want to singularly be my friend on Facebook, it's Emeritus Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T, Edwards, on Facebook. So, you know, tag me, you know, send a friend request, and, you know, We'll do a thorough background investigation on you, make sure you legit, and you know, get you logged in and get you all this information that you may have missed. Before we get started, let me do some housekeeping. Thursday, February 26th, the Electric Circus is back in town. It'll be held at Jazzit. That's located at 1342 Washington Avenue, South Beach. It's the funkiest show in town. The special guests will include Royal, the funky rock hybrid duo of Mike Flo, who's the DJ for the legendary Dead Prez, and Devon Lee, and MF Doom collaborator and psychedelic hip-hop solo artist Janario Jarrell, and, of course, Miami's own funk rocker, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. Come out, enjoy. The tickets are $10. There'll be live art. There'll be henna painting. You know, there'll be food trucks, I'm sure. You know, I think we're going to be probably broadcasting live that evening. We already have a guest scheduled, Fahim Brown. Fahim Ali. He's the founder of a nice little sports thing that he's going to be doing that weekend. The Dare to Dream event, which will be that whole weekend here in the South Florida area. So we'll be interviewing him about his endeavor. So make sure you come out, man. It should be a nice evening. Again, the tickets are $10. It begins at 10 p.m. and it's going to last till 2. I know myself, if I'm attending an event, I'm going to probably have to take the day off because, you know, South Beach, that's like about 20-30 miles away from my crib. So I ain't going to get out there and get myself messed up and then have to drive all the way back home and have to wake up early in the morning and go to somebody's job. So I'm going to probably have to take the day off that evening. But anyway, we have a lot of information that you need to catch up on. You know, information is constantly coming out day by day, moment by moment. So, you know, you here, and we here to put you up on game. So we're going to get started. So go ahead and fight that music about what you may have missed. Let's get it. All right, the first story up is teachers allowed to kill students under the new law present in the state of Texas. The House bill is 868, which protects teachers in the state of Texas. We have some audio about it. I want you to listen to the audio, and I'll be right back to let you know the details about the law.
Cut the cord and get a complete HD cloud phone system from Nextiva for your business. We offer dozens of features. Save up to 65% on a complete phone system. Service costs starting at $19.95 per month. Over 90,000 companies rely on Nextiva for their business VIOP communications, from small practices to large call centers. Our voice internet phones are easy to set up. You'll be set up and running in minutes. No contract, no hidden fees, cancel anytime, hassle-free. So what are you waiting for? Contact David Jack, 480-725-9492. Next Diva.
All right, so let me give you the details with regard to the story concerning the House bill for the state of Texas. That the controversial bill was introduced by Republican legislature by the name of Dan Flynn. Again, it's called the Teachers Protection Act, and the act provides public school teachers legal power to use force they deem necessary to protect themselves and others on school property. This bill would allow teachers to use physical force, even deadly force, if needed, when a student presents a very real danger to the teachers themselves or another student. Essentially, this would allow teachers to kill students if their violence warrants it. So, you know, if a teacher, you know, there's a lot of videos out there on YouTube. I'm pretty sure you can find that a student confronts a teacher. You know, teachers are always reluctant to strike students in fear of losing their job. So students, you know, sometimes being irrational, unruly, strike the teachers. You can see on several other videos, teachers being knocked out by one-hitter quitters, as they so aptly called it. So this gives them a mechanism to allow them essentially to be able to fight back against students that appear to be unruly to them or to other students. Flynn introduced the bill on January the 22nd to the state legislature, and let me give you a quote from it. An educator is justified in using force or deadly force on school property, on a school bus, or at a school-sponsored event in defense of the educator's person or in defense of a student of the school that employs the educator, if under the circumstances as the educator reasonably believes them to be, the educator would be justified in using force or deadly force as applicable in defense of the educator or the student. Now, if this bill is approved, the law would legally back teachers and school staff who make judgment calls in striking or killing a student they perceive as a serious threat at a school or on a school bus. Teachers will also be granted civil immunity, which means teachers wouldn't be legally responsible for injury or death of a student in a class. Damn. Flynn says it's a time for a bill of this magnitude to be enforced. And this is his quote. It's plain and simple. We have teachers who are afraid to defend themselves. I think it's a timely piece of legislation to help protect teachers. Now, Texas is one of 8 states in the United States that legally permits teachers, school teachers, and staff to carry concealed firearms on school property. Now, this is going to be an issue that's going to affect a large portion of the minority community. A group called Think Progress explains in its report that the Teachers Protection Act will allow students of color to be unfairly targeted. And this is a quote from one of their writers. By extension, if a student of color are already disproportionately targeted by school authorities for their behavior, they could also become target of deadly force used by the educators. Now, just think about this. If you look at the records as far as the number of students disciplined in schools around the United States, a disproportionate amount of people of students of color, meaning the Hispanic and African American populations, are often punished for minor offenses such as bringing cell phones to school, disorderly conduct, etc., while their white counterparts are routinely not disciplined as thoroughly as those. So if the concern is, if that's already an issue and those are minor offenses, what if a violent altercation were to occur? How would that be, received? Would it be something like what's taking place in the street now with law enforcement officials and people of color? Would that be the case? Would that be something that would be taking place around in schools around the United States? So you have to watch this situation. We'll monitor it and see. But, man, that's crazy right there. So that's the first story. Now, here's the second story. We live in the state of Florida. Last year in the elections, the midterm elections, marijuana was up for being voted in for medicinal use. Of course, here it didn't pass. So, we're a state that, will not allow, marijuana uses for medicinal purposes. But now states like Colorado, which I'm not going to sit here, it's just opinion-based. States like Colorado that don't have those restrictions are making money hand over fist with their legislation about cannabis. And here's a story with regard to that. All right, the story reads: cannabis is making Colorado so much money they literally have to give some back to the residents. All right, so here's the story. Voters approved the law legalizing cannabis, several years ago, and it was designated to put tax revenues towards schools and other state programs, but an existing state law may send some money back directly to the residents. The AP story written by Christian Wyatt describes it in her piece as quite a headache for lawmakers. So, the fact that The fact that money may be refunded back to the residents of the state is causing a big concern. The Republicans and Democrats in that state are trying to work together to try to make some type of legislation where they won't have to pay that money back. So let me go into a little bit of detail. The Colorado state constitution set a limit of how much tax money the state can take in before it has to give some back to its residents. In 1992, Colorado voters approved the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, a constitutional amendment mandated that all new taxes appear before voters. It states that the state of Colorado must pay back taxpayers when the state collects more money than was permitted by a formula based on inflation and population growth. Over the years, Colorado has issued refunds 6 times, totaling more than $3.3 billion. That means Coloradans may each get their own cut of the $50 million in recreational pot taxes collected in the first year of legal weed. It's a situation so bizarre that it has gotten the Republicans and Democrats for once to agree on a tax issue. Wyatt Wright. Now, let me continue and let me give you the details about this. Because there is so much tax revenue and the tax collections in Colorado are rapidly increasing, the governor's budget writers predict roughly $30.5 million will go back to individual residents, which means each individual resident in the state of Colorado will receive about $7.63. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but when you spread it out over the population, you know, hey, man, $7.63, man, you see how gas local right now, you're going to get you about three gallons of gas and, you know, probably get you a bag of Doritos or something. So, you know, that's good, especially when you're getting something free. Everybody likes something free, especially when you go, you know, you check your mailbox and it's a check for something. Everybody love that. So, you know, both parties, of course, are scrambling to try to figure out something to avoid this issue. The source of this was High Times Magazine and several other sources reporting this story. So, man, listen, it just goes to show that people that are afraid to tax something, you know, marijuana hasn't killed anybody. Pink caps kill more people than marijuana. Slip and fall accidents kill more people than marijuana. So the fact that it's not legalized anyway, considering that back in the early 1900s, hemp was legal. It was on the back of the $10 bill, and it has so many different uses. The fact that it's not legal in the United States is ridiculous. So, all right. So listen, we're going to go to our last story before we go to a commercial break, and this one is shocking as well, man. Every day your civil rights getting violated. So this last story is regarding the new NYPD policy. Boy, NYPD always staying in the news. The new NYPD policy to patrol protests with machine guns. Now, that's crazy. So that means when you have the, you know, you have a freedom to, in the Constitution, you have the right to assemble, freedom of assembly, so you can protest, you know, all the stuff that's been going on with regard to Eric Garner, you know, Occupy Wall Street, you know, the marches for Mike Brown, all these little things that go on where people want to voice their opinion, you know, just go out and march and, you know, assemble and, you know, have the signs out and stuff like that. Hey, man, the city of New York is going to bring out the whole chopper. They bringing out everything now to monitor the protests. So let me give it to you like this. NYPD Commissioner Bill Branson announced Thursday last week that 350 heavily armed NYPD officers called the Strategic Response Group will soon be patrolling protests in the city at large. The Department of Homeland Security is supplying the resources, as is the city of New York. The Pentagon has previously provided machine guns, ammunition, and other military gear to New York police and other local cops around the country. Now, the program is set to begin with 2 precincts in Queens and 2 in Manhattan, though Branson did not specifically state when. During the announcement at the Police Foundation breakfast at the Mandarin Hotel, Branson also said his plan was backed by both the mayor and the city council. He said that the effort is intended to improve police relations. Now, listen to this. The effort is intended to improve police relations with communities since regular police will no longer be called from their local precinct to deal with protests and alleged security threats. Now, this is a quote from him. For years, we've been asking our officers to engage in the community, but we've never given them time to do it or the training. So, look, this is being now where all this being said. I don't really know what to say, man. I just hope that people are reviewing this information, seeing what's taking place around the world, and are beginning to wake up and see, man, they turning this country into a police state. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not going against the establishment. Well, I kind of am. You know, I'm on the Anti-Robot Radio Network. I kind of am. So the thing is, man, they're stealing our civil rights. Slowly but surely, you know, now there's going to be a military presence. So let me think of this. We're in South Florida next week. They're going to have the annual Trayvon Martin Foundation is going to have their annual walk, you know, to support that foundation. So now, say, for instance, you know, they have speakers out there, whatever the case may be, and just think about what type of presence that is. When think about what kind of presence that is when you have heavily armed police officers, security officials, et cetera, surrounding any type of event, and all you want to do is just voice your ability for free speech. That's crazy. So, man, hey, we have a lot of other issues to discuss with regard to that. I know I'm getting a lot of texts asking about the status of Bobby Christie, you know, Bobby Christina, Bobby Brown's daughter. I don't even know, we not that show that discussed that type of stuff. But since somebody texted me and asked me about the status, according to the reports I've read, she's still currently in a coma. There's been some uneven reports saying that the family are preparing for the last, you know, doing their last prayers. They may have to pull the plug because she's brain dead. They can't revive her. And then there's other information. You know, the family continues to pray. The information is false. You know, it's Bobby Brown's birthday. So he's dealing with all these issues as well. You know, it's all this false report that, you know, giving him anxiety. So, I mean, that's your Bobby Brown, Whitney Houston, Bobby Christina update for the day. Let me check some of these emails. I'm getting a lot of texts and emails. Let's see what's going on the text line. All right. Give me one second. Okay. We have one listener saying, the PDs are supposed to train. I thought they really do need cultural and sensitivity training. Police used to be friendly even in the community. Now they seem to want to promote fear. And the listener is bringing up a valid point. I'm not going to sit here and say that I grew up in a society, you know, in an environment where, you know, the police rolled around and was, you know, taking cats out of trees and all that type of stuff. It wasn't doing it like that around here. But if you watch TV back in the early 70s, when I grew up in the 80s, you know, you'll constantly see the depiction of the police, you know, going around, being friendly to the community, the individuals in the community willing to get out their cars, talk to them, or maybe if they're at the park, get out, talk to one or two members of the community and to find out what's going on. They had a pulse of what's going on. I know here in the Miami Gardens area, one of the primary issues with regard to that is, you know, so many of the individuals are out from out of town, so many of the officers from out of state. You know, Miami Gardens is one of the highest paying police departments in the United States. So a lot of people came from different municipalities and came down here. So now they're in a new area, unfamiliar with the territory, unfamiliar with the citizens in the community. So therefore, there is no rapport. So instantly, you know, instead of trying to establish one, they just go out, make arrests, rub community officials the wrong way. Now you have a lot of complaints. People don't feel safe. And then when something does occur, when crimes aren't solved or, you know, there aren't any solutions offered, then you know what? Now you have a lot of, you know, distrust in law enforcement officials. So here in Miami Gardens, I know it's a lot of distrust. I know just in the neighborhood I'm in, if you're familiar with the Miami Gardens area near the stadium, I know in the area I'm currently in, you know, there's a lot of murders that have taken place here in the area, and many of them haven't been solved. And it doesn't appear that they are going to be solved. So when you have that and you add on to all the angst that's being felt around the community, man, that's when you have a powder keg getting ready to explode with nothing but bad news involved in it. All right, hold on. So we have another text. Let me see. Okay, boy, look, we getting a lot of texts. I guess this is somebody from Miami Gardens. The Miami Gardens Police Department has made little attempt to build trust amongst the citizens nor establish community relations. They look at you crazy when you say good morning or good day. Lastly, yes, some of our young men need to learn respect, et cetera, yet the police also need to learn humility and that they are public servants. All right, so, hey, ma'am, I see that last topic with regard to the police carrying these weapons has sparked a lot of interest. You know, and the listener makes up a good point. It's incumbent upon the citizens to try to establish a good relationship with the officers, but it's the officers doing. Before I say that, let me just say I got to pause because it's two different types of law enforcement officials that you're dealing with. Now I'm gonna break it down to you, and I know a lot of people don't want to hear this, but you know, we ain't here for community relations. We here to keep it real. Now, you have a policeman who is considered to be a human being, and his duty is for the common law. He's there to serve and protect, and he's there to uphold the law of the land. So, you know, he's there to serve and protect. Listen to the key words that I'm using, serve and protect and uphold the common law. So he's going to go by the letter of the law, and he's going to make rational decisions and use his discretion. Now you have, that's a policeman. Now a police officer is this. He's a corporate employee. Just think about it. He's a corporate employee. He's a revenue collector, and he enforces the statutes. So now just think about the differences that I just outlined. Now, when you see a police officer is just going to pull you over and let you know, hey, man, you speeding, you need to go, I'm going to write you this ticket, and that's that. So a lot of people call police officers road pirates because all they want to do is pull people over and just enforce all the statutes, as I indicated. They just want to enforce all the statutes of the law. So if they see you with a code violation, they just going to come over and write a different, you know, a ticket for that. If they see you doing something wrong, just a minor incident, they're going to write you a ticket for that because their whole purpose is, and, you know, it's been documented that they have to meet a certain quota when it comes to issuing out tickets and making arrests or what have you. This is common knowledge. I mean, there's nothing that I'm making up. You can look this up, or you can ask a police officer in your area. So that's what it is, man. So that's the first of the first three topics of the show this evening. Let me see if I can ride out. I might ride out with one more before we go to a commercial break. Let me see if I got one. Hold on. Yeah, I got one. No, I can't use that one. I skip that one and come back to that one after the commercial break. Now, here's one that you may have missed as well, and this goes to the point that about athletes being paid and the student athletes in college. Now, you have two college athletes from the University of North Carolina that sued the school over their academic failures. So if you're familiar with the University of North Carolina, last year they came out, they did a probe and discovered that a lot of the student athletes that attended the university, they were getting bogus tuition. I mean, they were getting bogus reports, bogus grades, and things of that nature. So I'm going to go over it with you real quick, and we're going to try to go to a commercial break. Two former University of North Carolina athletes have filed a lawsuit against the school and the NCAA saying that neither has done enough to ensure athletes receive a quality education. The lawsuit names former women's basketball player Rashonda McCant and former football player Devon Ramsey as plaintiffs, but seek class action status. And this was filed last week, Thursday, in the Durham County Court. and it's the second lawsuit to emerge in the wake of North Carolina's long-running academic fraud scandal that's heavily involved athletes. The first was filed by ex-football player Michael McAdoo in November in the U.S. District Court against the school. This one, however, expands the scope beyond the Chapel Hill campus to include the governing body for the major college sport. And the lawsuit seeks unspecified damages as well as the creation of an independent commission to review and report on academic integrity, which, while accusing the NCAA of acting carelessly and neglectedly in their oversight role, while they should have been ensuring academic integrity at member schools. All right, now this is a quote from the lawsuit. Instead, the NCAA sat idly by permitting big-time college sports programs to operate as diploma mills that compromise educational opportunities and the future job prospects of student athletes for the sake of wins and revenue. Now, I'm going to give you now, this is the part that's the kicker right here. I'm going to tell you this class that all the kids were taking to get these grades in the past. Now, the focus is no-show classes at University of North Carolina's formerly named African and Afro-American Studies Department. Classes which were often treated as independent studies that required no class time and one or two research papers. An investigation conducted by former U.S. Justice Department official Keith Wanstand reported that the office administrator, not a faculty member, listen to me, an office administrator, not a faculty member, typically handed out assignments that then high grades after only a scan of the work, regardless of the quality. So that, man, that just means that you was going to study hall, in a sense. And now, as an athlete, now this is the thing. As an athlete, and this may be the misnomer, but we're going to keep it real because that's what we do on the program. A lot of athletes, they want to skate by and do as little as possible, play their sport, and if they're able to receive a diploma, they're fine with the receipt of the diploma, and hopefully they'll make it to the league with the hope that they'll make it to the league and they'll never have to use their diploma because they feel like they're going to be able to, you know, accumulate millions and millions of dollars with their athletic prowess. Now, the problem comes, what if you don't get drafted? What if you don't make it in the league? And after 2 or 3 years of probably being in the league, you're no longer able to, you know, get on a team. Then what you're going to do with that degree or the lack thereof of knowledge about, you know, what you should have been studying or what you should have been trying to do to, you know, maintain your diploma and academic standing. Now, that's the problem. All right. So here it is. Weinstein's October report found the fraud ran. Now, listen to this. The fraud ran from 1993 to 2011 and affected more than 3,100 students, roughly half being athletes. And it also outlined how academic counselors enrolled athletes in those classes and how poor oversight allowed the fraud to run unchecked for so long. So you think about, damn, that's like damn near 20 years. 20 years, 3,100 students. So you just think about all the bogus diplomas that's been handed out. And, you know, people may have still been able to get a job, but what about your ability to understand what you're doing or what you study? If college is your thing, because most people, you know, most people with college degrees still can't get a job. So, you know, hey. Now, Thursday's complaint included roughly 12-page list of academically unsound courses, including 21 outside of Weinstein's time range and reaching as early as the fall of 1989. So that's an additional 4 years on top of that. The NCAA has reopened its investigation into academic misconduct at the school. UNC also faces questions from its accreditation agency. So, hey, man, it's going down all around the world, even in the colleges, man, and that's the thing about it. You know, as a student athlete, you know, as an athlete in general, and this is where should athletes get paid, or, you know, is the cost of, you know, scholarship and education worth all that? You know, what people fail to realize is they say students get free room and board because they have a scholarship. But scholarships are 1-year contracts. each year, like a football player or a basketball player, each year the scholarship has to be reviewed. And what if a new coach comes in, or what if they feel that you're not performing up to your to their expectations? They have a right to rescind that scholarship. So you think about it in that sense. And now if you go to a major institution and all their revenue is earned on football or basketball, say, for instance, in North Carolina's case, North Carolina is mostly known for basketball. That would generate all their revenue. So as a basketball player, they're not concerned with your academic. They're not concerned primarily with your academic ability. No, not to say that their graduation rate aren't compromised when you fail to do so. However, they're more inclined, if you're a great player, a five-star blue-chip athlete, they want you to perform on the court or on the field and, you know, academic be down. You know, they'll get you by to make you eligible. And you hear that all the time with a variety of the students either trying to get into school, you know, from high school, you know, that, you know, just the other, yesterday was just National Signing Day. So a lot of students that go into these different colleges around the country, you know, they have to be eligible to get into school. You know, some of the student athletes will choose a public school because the criteria to be able to get in are a little less, not as stringent as that of trying to get into a private school, say the University of Miami or Stanford or Vanderbilt or something of that nature. So, you know, man, it's all, man, in a sense, it's modern-day slavery. You know what I'm saying? The athletes are being used. You know, they're going to do enough to get you by. And if you can earn them some money, because the NCAA, you know, is a big-time business. They make money all the time. You go to a major bowl game, they're going to get you the Beats headphones and a nice G-Shock watch. Meanwhile, they generating millions and millions of dollars in revenue. So you think about a school like Michigan. They seat 110,000 people in their football stadium, and they have 6 to 7 home games. Think about how much money that's generating on a game-to-game basis. And what are those students getting? They're not getting anything in return. True enough, yeah, they had the ability to get an education, but if you have instances like this, then they're truly not even getting an education. And they being and the school is being negligent. So, man, hey, that's what you have with regard to that. We're going to see, man, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Let me catch my breath. I'm a little parched, you know, so let me go ahead and get me a beverage, you know, not an alcoholic beverage, man. I'm staying away from that, man, baby. I'm getting water. Get this alkaline rate up, boy, 7% PFF or higher over here, baby. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. I'll be right back, 2 and 2, have a couple of more stories for you, and then we'll get into the Super Bowl. But, you know, we're not going to talk about the Super Bowl in the sense of X's and O's. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl, the financial ramifications of how much money the Super Bowl generated and how the NFL out here stealing. So we're going to talk about that. 2 more stories. We'll get to Are You Serious? And, man, we'll be right back. Stay around.
Yes, indeed. Fresh for the 2013.
revive your credit. Call us toll-free, 1-844-237-3061. The Credit Doctor.
Anti-Robot Network. The evolution is now.
Reloaded, man. You heard that song on the comeback end of the show, man. That's the show. If you watch the movie Baby Boy, that's when Snoop Dogg was in Taraji P. Henson's house, Yvette house, and Taraji P. Henson didn't want to give him none, so you know he had to go sit on the couch. And he was just vibing, smoking him a J. He was just chilling back, sitting back, vibing. But anyway, man, we have a couple of more stories. Yeah, I'm going to talk about the Super Bowl, and we'll get into Are You Serious? If you want to chime in, the number here is 323-792-3072. The number here again is 323-792-3072. Now, for all you alcohol drinkers out there, let me give you this little news right here. You know, you might care, you might not care. If you don't drink this particular brand of alcohol, then it shouldn't affect you at all. All right? There's this whiskey called Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey, and it's been recalled in 3 countries around the world because it has an antifreeze ingredient in it. So, you know, this is what we do. We're going to give it to you and, you know, let you be the judge and see if you like it. I don't know if the audio is available, so we just going to fire this up like this. Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey is taking heat in Europe over a chemical ingredient that is used in some form of antifreeze. Norway, Sweden, Finland have recalled the popular cinnamon-flavored liquor and a trendy favorite of a sweet tooth college students after a batch of the North American recipe contained high levels of propylene glycol. And it was shipped there, and its manufacturer said on Tuesday. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says that the ingredient is generally recognized as safe for use in food where it is used to enhance flavor by absorbing water. On the company's website, Fireball's website, the company has posted a vigorous defense of its drink, noting that the pharmaceutical grade ingredient, which is used in food, is handled accordingly to stricter standards than is an industrial-grade polyglycinol, which is used in antifreeze. Fireball is perfectly safe to drink, a statement reads, just as it's always been. Now, the ingredient can have toxic effects in certain circumstances, including for people suffering from pre-existing skin and eye conditions, according to the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. In recent years, the substance has been used as a less toxic alternative in antifreeze, which is killing pets who lap up the sweet-tasting engine fluid. But the Humane Society wants the ingredient still labeled as toxic. The European Union stricter guidelines on recommended levels of the ingredient for state-owned retailers to yank the drink from shelves in Sweden and Finland over the last week. Norway, which is not a part of the European Union, also pulled the product. Europe generally enforces tighter regulations of ingredients used in food. So listen, man, if you follow Monsanto, which is genetically modified organisms, and that's what Monsanto is. So here in the United States, Obama, he led his campaign. If you go back, you can listen to the transcripts. He led his campaigns indicating that he wanted all genetically modified food to be labeled so people can know the difference. If they want to go organic, they want to go, you know, they want to use these products that had GMOs in it, then, you know, it at least it's labeled for the consumer to know. But here in the United States, that's not mandated. But across seas, you know, a lot of companies don't mess with Monsanto. They don't use genetically modified organisms in their food. All that kind of stuff has been banned. So you think about that, and I'm going to read you a couple of companies that have that's had stuff pulled around the seas, around the world, with regard to different chemicals being found in the food. So I don't know if you remember this story. Subway had a chemical that they were putting in their bread that's commonly used in yoga mats. So once that was discovered, Subway had to come up with a whole different formula, a whole different, you know, ingredients to put in the bread because this was found out. Another substance was that was banned in Australia and Europe that was found in Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola was some type of brominated vegetable oil, which is prohibited for food use in Australia, Europe, and India, and Japan from this soft drink, but it's allowed in North America. And so let me just break this down. Sales of the 66-proof drink, 66% proof, and it sells more than Jameson, Irish whiskey, and Patron. It made more money than both of those brands last year. It made $61 million, according to the Bloomberg Business Week. So it's a popular drink. I guess it's popular amongst college students. But, you know, once you find out the ingredients and some of this stuff, and, you know, just with most things in life, you know, people get the information, and it's just, you know, it's depending upon the individual if they're going to heed the information or whatever. A lot of people know that different types of food are bad for them. They know smoking is bad for them. They know whatever the case may be, they smoking to their doctors or whomever, and they say, well, okay, you need to stop this activity. You need to exercise more. You need to eat right. You need to stop drinking. You need to do whatever. And even with all that, and they know the health ramifications, hey, man, they're going to still go out and do what they need to do. So it's on them. My job, our job here on the network and the station is to give you the information. That's what it is, man. Hey, Fireball whiskey, cinnamon whiskey. It had antifreeze in it. Now, you're going to drink it or you're going to put that stuff, you know, antifreeze. Now, just think about what antifreeze, you know, you put that in your engine to cool the engine off. You're going to drink that? Okay. I'm just, you know, I have to ask these questions. Okay, cool. All right, cool. All right, the last story is, and, hey, man, we always tell you, man, people violating your civil rights, y'all need to tighten up. Cops arrest public defender for refusing to let them interrogate her client without counsel. Now, everybody know when you're going to watch cop shows, I'm not going to say everybody know because, you know, everybody hasn't been arrested. Well, everybody has been. You know, everybody's watched a cop show or a movie involving police officers, and they've been read, the person on there been read their Miranda warning, and, you know, you have a right to remain silent, you have the right to an attorney, you don't have to speak to us, you know, you need to have your attorney present, blase, blase, whoop-de-whoop. Okay, but here in San Francisco, apparently, man, they ain't even doing that. So, in San Francisco, a deputy public defender, Jamie Tolson, was arrested on Tuesday outside a courtroom in the city Hall of Justice after officers said she resisted arrest and interfered with a police investigation. The public defender said she was just doing her job and advising her client of his right not to be questioned without an attorney present. And this is her statement. This is not Guantanamo Bay. You have an absolute right to have a lawyer with you when you're being questioned. She also stated that she was just simply doing her job, and this is reported in the San Francisco public San Francisco Gate, SF Gate, during the press conference. This occurred when she was exiting the courtroom in San Francisco Hall of Justice Tuesday afternoon with a client accused of shoplifting, and the co-defendant went plain clothes. San Francisco Police Department Sergeant Brian Stansbury and four uniformed officers approached and asked the public defender to step aside so that the officers could take photos of her client without her being present. you know, she felt that that was, you know, against the law, so she stood up for her client, and then once she refused to step aside as ordered by the sergeant, she was then arrested for resisting arrest because she did not comply. All I could do is just get a sigh. I'm going to put that in parentheses, sigh, give a deep, and just let you know, man, hey, you're right. As I indicated before, your rights are slowly being violated on a daily basis. Do we have Malcolm? Can we, where the brother minister at? Can we fire him up? Can we bring him out?
Oh, I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked. Bamboozled. Led astray. Run amok. This is what he does.
All right. All right, now we're going to, you know, I was going to say this for another segment, but we just going to ride on the way out, too, because we're just going to ride out, man. We're a little late. We're going to ride out. So we're going to talk about the Super Bowl. You know, the Super Bowl, of course, the highest-rated Super Bowl, you know, in history. Everybody had their televisions tuned in. You know, everybody had their opinion on what Pete Carroll of the Seattle Seahawks, coach of Seattle Seahawks, should have done. Should he thrown in that situation? He should have handed it off to Marshawn Lynch. But we ain't here to talk about that. All the X's and O's and stuff, we ain't here to talk about that. We here to break this down on a different level, on a socioeconomic level. So let me get this to you, and I want you to sit back and really think about this. Now, when you're dealing with people, you know, when you're dealing with video games, say Grand Theft Auto, that includes a lot of violence. Like, it's supposed to be real-life scenarios. You go out, rob, steal. There's prostitution in the video game, all this kind of stuff. They say video games don't really have an effect on the human psyche. Okay, we'll get them a pass on that. So now you go to a movie. You watch a violent movie, you know, the 300 series movie, or you watch any type of violent movie where, you know, the Rambo movie, the last Rambo movie where everybody shooting a chopper, you see, is in 3D, blood, gore, guts, all that kind of stuff. So you're sitting there 2 or 3 hours, and they say, hey, man, watching a movie, a violent movie, doesn't have influence on behavior. Now, I want you to sit back and listen to those two scenarios, and I want you to sit here and think about this. Now, companies spend between $3.8 million to $5 million on 30-cent commercial spots during the Super Bowl with the hopes that you seeing their product during this time would help encourage you to go out and buy their product or go to their website or whatever the case may be. Now, just think about that. So you see a Kia commercial and you see your favorite actor driving the Kia. It's supposed to make you go out and consider buying a Kia during your next purchase. Or you see the Machete in the Snickers commercial in the Brady Bunch scenario, and when you get hungry, you want to go out and buy you a Snickers, something like that. Now, just think about that. These 30-second ads, and they spending all this amount of money because they know the world is watching this one sporting event. So they know this is the time to inundate you with all their merchandise, all their material, so with the hope of trying to influence you to purchase their product. Just think about that for a moment, and then think about how, and if you follow me on any of our social media outlets, I'm real big on imagery and how imagery affects the human psyche, and just think about that. So in one instance, they're telling you this doesn't have an effect, but on the same token, you know, they're going to spend all this money to do it. And I'm going to give you a case scenario in which this happened. I can't think of the young man's first name, but his last name was Tate. It was a case here in the state of Florida. His mother was a highway patrol officer, and he was watching wrestling. So, you know, wrestling was a big influence in his life. His mother was babysitting a young lady, this young man, which was much older and much bigger than the young lady, used wrestling technique against the young girl and ultimately killed the young girl. Now, that was used in court, you know, as a means of defense. The fact that wrestling played a huge part in making this young man like that, and, you know, perform this ill, because, you know, he didn't have a correlation that you know, wrestling on television, you know, it's just entertainment. You know, although they is a physical sport activity, it's called the WWE, Worldwide Wrestling Entertainment. So it's entertainment. That's the key word in it. So it's there to entertain you. It's not there as a physical, a real physical activity. Ultimately, Tate was sentenced to, he was the first juvenile, I think, was sentenced to life in prison. And then, you know, ultimately he came out of jail a couple of times. And, you know, you ultimately violated his supervision. But that just lets you know the influence of television and music. That's just a Lionel Tate. That's his name, Lionel Tate. And that just lets you know the influence of the medium. So now let's break this down further. Now, since 1997, 20 new NFL stadiums have been built, and it's cost taxpayers $4.7 billion. Now, the stadium construction is financed with tax-free bonds intended for schools and roads, saving the NFL team $4 billion. Now, listen to these numbers that I'm giving you. This real information I'm giving you about how much money the NFL is making, and the NFL is a non-profit organization off top. So they're not even paying taxes, but I'm going to get to that. Teams sell luxury seating to corporate clients worth $2 billion a year, all tax deductible. Now, Super Bowl commercials, as I indicated before, Super Bowl commercials cost between $3.8 and $4.5 million for a 30-second spot, and that's tax deductible. So the companies that's buying these spots, yeah, they spending all this money and go to the league, but they get to write it off. If you have a company, if you're a company, you already know this. Or if you donate clothes, just a regular individual, you donate clothes or you give to your favorite charity, even though you're spending money, at the end of the year, you claim that money back. It's tax deductible. So it's to your benefit. And then lastly, the NFL makes $10 billion in revenue annually, but it has paid zero federal income taxes in 50 years. So just think about how much money the NFL is making. Now, this is just the NFL. So this is just the owners that we're talking about. Just think about this. I'm getting ready to tell you this. Roger Goodell makes around $40 million a year. Now, that's Roger Goodell making $40 million a year. Between $40 and $44 million a year. Now, if Roger Goodell is making that much money and it's 32 NFL teams, how much money are the NFL teams making? And I want you to think about this. By the time, NFL teams for fake games, now this is preseason games, these games don't even count. They still charge their ticket holders regular price. They still get paid for concessions. They still get paid from parking. So they just making money year-round. By the time the third home game is played in one of their stadiums, man, all the NFL players have been paid. So it's just a matter of then they just making cushion. They making all kind of cake out here. They making cake. Now, you think about Katy Perry. Katy Perry and Missy and Lenny Kravitz performed at the halftime show. All right, well, let's talk about how much they did, okay? So they performed it, the most watched Super Bowl in history, most watched halftime show in history. Katy Perry come in like Voltron, she riding a lion, she done jumped into the Pikachu outfit or whatever type of Pokemon outfit, that red fiery outfit, conspiracy theories out for that, whatever. She done came out, she did a thing. Everybody thoroughly enjoyed the entertainment. Lenny Kravitz out there singing I Kissed the Girl, all that kind of stuff. Missy come out there, the young Thundercats don't know who Missy Elliott is. They talking about, man, Katy Perry always giving, it's good that Katy Perry giving these unknown artists a chance to blow up, man. She's always looking out for the unknown artists. Man, Missy Elliott been out here. But let's just talk about the money that was generated as a result of them appearing at the halftime show. All right. Industry sources suggest that Missy's catalog of songs could earn a sales increase of around 1,000% in the week ending February 1st, jumping to perhaps 70,000 or more downloads sold. That would be up from just 6,000 in the week ending January the 25th, according to Nielsen Music. The February 1st week official sales figures, as compiled and collected by Nielsen and used for Billboard charts, will be released on February the 4th. So this already took place. All right. I'm getting a text, so I'm sorry about that. All right. Elliott performed a medley of three tunes during Perry's halftime spectacular. So all three of these songs that she performed, all are top three of the top 10 in iTunes right now. Get Your Freak On, Work It, and Lose Control. They were each aiming to sell around 15,000 to 20,000 downloads for the week. And in the previous week, they only sold around 1,000 downloads, according to Nielsen. All right? And Work It looks to be the halftime show's biggest seller, and it got around 20,000 downloads. Now, Katy Perry, she benefited as well. Her song, Roar, sold about 17,000 downloads. And her whole catalog, her collection of songs, received about 100,000 downloads, up 75% compared to 57,000 downloads the previous week. So listen, man, the exposure of television means that people are going to gravitate towards your product, just like I stated at the beginning of this particular piece. You know what I'm saying? People are going to go out. They're going to go buy your product. They see it at halftime. They're going to go out, buy the Doritos. They're going to go out, buy the Coronas. They're going to go out, buy the little taco, Loco Camacho, Big State Wrap, whatever. They're going to go out and buy all these products because they see it. You know, we're a consumer society, and we're going to go out and we're going to cut that check. We're going to spend that money. We're going to do all that. We're going to do that. And this is the result of that. Missy Elliott. Missy Elliott hadn't made an album in years and years and years and years, but she's standing to make a whole bunch of cash as a result of it. And Katy Perry, she already reveling, so all this do is just add more guap to her. So that's it, man. That's it with the Super Bowl, man. No S's and O's. No Marshawn Lynch smiling at Pete Carroll as he walked off the sideline, which he did. No Julian Edelman. Getting he didn't get catfished, but you know, he was told, got caught slipping, chick took a picture of him while he was lying in the bed asleep. So yeah. And she went out and said, "Hey man, I fucked Julian Edelman for real." So that's all over the internet. And no Gronk, you know, smashing everything in sight, partying, party bus, getting told, and all that kind of stuff. So that's it, man. That's it for that little segment. We got one more segment. We got Are You Serious? And Are You Serious is really serious this week. So we got Are You Serious? We're going to go to a commercial break. Again, we're going to take a little break, a little parch, and we get a little squig or something refreshing, and then we'll be right back with Are You Serious? We'll be back. This is Brent Edwards. This is The Porch. I'll be right back with you.
Represent County to the fullest. Stay grinding. Ray and Mr. Flood. And you the Five State Grinder Entertainment on Facebook and Twitter. When the State Grinder, yeah, State Grinder Entertainment, 2013 until.
Are you paying too much for a car? Can't buy a house? Can't get the bank to give you a credit card? Then call the Credit Doctor. We can revive your credit. Call us toll free, 1-844-237-3061. The Credit Doctor. Cut the cord and get a complete HD cloud phone system from Nextiva for your business. We offer dozens of features. Save up to 65% on a complete phone system. Service costs starting at $19.95 per month. Over 90,000 companies rely on Nextiva for their business VIOP communications, from small practices to large call centers. Our voice internet phones are easy to set up. You'll be set up and running in minutes. No contract, no hidden fees, cancel anytime, hassle-free. So what are you waiting for? Contact David Jack, 480-725-9492. Nextiva.
Take it on in. We late night. We on a late night hype tonight. So, yeah, man. This Porch Reloaded. This your boy, Brand Edwards, man. About to bring this thing on home. Two crazy stories. So, we might as well go ahead and file that Are You Serious music and let's go on and take it on home. Let's get it. All right, first story. I ain't going to leave this one here. First story. A Missouri man arrested after telling black waitress. All right, a Missouri man arrested after telling black waitress he wanted to show her where he hung her grandpa. All right, man, let's go ahead and get into it. I know you probably shaking your head like, what? Yeah, it's going down out here. A 65-year-old white Missouri man was arrested and charged with a hate crime after he reportedly used racial slurs toward a black waitress whom he also allegedly told, "I have a place I would like to take you while I hunt your grandpa." Tommy Guy of Maryville, Missouri, told the waitress after she asked if he wanted wheat or white toast that he was prejudiced, therefore he would take white toast, according to the probable cause statement viewed by the Maryville Daily Forum. The offender allegedly grabbed the waitress by the arm so hard that it left a bruise and asked if she liked the party. He then allegedly said, "I have a place I would like to take you where I hung your grandpa." All right. The waitress reportedly left the dining area and waited in the kitchen until the police arrived. According to the police report, the offender initially denied making the remarks but dropped a few racial slurs in trying to explain his innocence. The newspaper noted that the offender was released from the Norway County Jail on $4,900 bond. Hey, man, I don't, if you're surprised by this, I don't even know why, man. This is the society that we live in today. Hey, man, it hasn't changed. It looked like it's never going to change. So that's what that is. Now, this last story before we close it out, you might want to go get your cool beverage on this one right here. So, a man says a dolphin seduced him into having sex for a year. You heard me. A man says a dolphin seduced him into having sex for a year. In a new 15-minute documentary, the 63-year-old Malcolm Brenner of Pontegora, Florida, said that he started rubbing her along her back, the dolphin, working her way up to her flute, her tail, and as he was rubbing her and moving her head, her hand towards her tail, Dolly was slowly rolling around her long axis, the Mirror reported. In the film Dolphin Lover, an animation of what it's like to have sex with a dolphin is played to viewers to help them with their imagination. Brenner was given free access to dolphins at the former theme park in Sarasota, Florida, where he lived, and became friends with her by going swimming with her, he said in an interview. Brenner, who was a photographer at the time, mentioned that she announced her intention to him by positioning herself so he was rubbing against her, adding, at first, he discouraged her as he wasn't interested, but after some time, he thought, if this was a woman, would I come up with these rationalities and excuses? He added that it was when the park was closing that they successfully eluded the male dolphins so we could spend some time alone. He said that he called it a relationship because that's what it was, and when she died, it made him feel terrible, and so he fell into depression, which lasted 5 years. Dolly was moved away when the park closed 9 months after they had first met, and Brenner said that he believed her death a short time later was a cause of suicide, that she voluntarily stopped breathing. That's why this segment called Are You Serious? That's shit like this is why this segment is called Are You Serious? Hey, man, this is a real article. You can look it up on the internet. And there's several stories pertaining to this one right here. So I'm not making it up. It's a legit story. And yeah, man, the dolphin committed suicide because it was, you know, they said dolphins are intelligent creatures. But yeah, that's all I can say, man. When we get this thing visual, you're gonna see these facial expressions, and you're gonna be like, boy, that off the chain, yeah. Having sex with a dolphin. That's what it is, man. That's what we wrap up the show with. Listen, again, I appreciate everybody that stayed around and tuned in to the show. We got a lot of audio, but, you know, I know the executives hate when I say this, but, you know, I apologize, man, because, you know, I don't like to talk this much. I be liking to let the audio do its thing. But it's all good. Next week, in the following weeks, we have a lot of guests, so this will be the last time we'll be guest-free for a while. Next week, we have a representative from a clothing line called OG Clothing Line. They're out of the UK, out of Britain. So they'll be on next week. We're going to try to get in contact with a jazz musician by the name of Ernest Walker. He's having an event on February 15th. In Pembroke Gardens, so we'll try to get in contact with him so he can let it be known what his endeavors are about. We're going to have a couple of other guests. Again, we're going to have Fahim Ali at the end of the month. And, you know, we're going to try to keep this thing moving, keep the guests coming. You know, of course, if you know anybody that's doing anything positive, man, tell them to get in contact with me. We'd love to have them on the show, so they can share what they have going on, because that's what it's all about. Sharing is caring. You know, not to say it all cliche like that, but that's what it is. You know, if somebody's doing something positive, man, they should have that information shared across the world so people might support it. Just like the man in Detroit that walks 21 miles to and from work on a daily basis. They collected $150,000. They did somebody set up a GoFundMe account. He has currently $150,000, which he said he may not use to even purchase a vehicle. You know, he may not even take all that money. But that's what it is. If you're doing something positive, man, we love to have you on the show because we're trying to make everybody's important. All right. Again, we're going to do some housekeeping and we're going to wrap this thing up. On Thursday, February 26th, the Electric Circus is back in town. The Funkiest Show is back in the South Florida area. It'll be at Jazzy's. The location is 1342 Washington Avenue, South Beach. That'll be Thursday at 10 p.m. And listen, man, let me give you the lineup. You're going to have special guests will be Royal, the funk rock hybrid duo of Mike Flo, who is the DJ for the legendary Dead Prez, and Devon Lee. You have MF Doom collaborator and psychedelic hip-hop solo artist Janario Jarrell. And, of course, we have, you know, good friend of mine and, you know, the executive producer of the show and Miami's own funk rocker, the fabulous Moonshine Brown. So, you know, you're going to come on out, enjoy the live art. They're going to have henna painting, food, drinks. It's going to be an eclectic vibe. Man, come on out and support the cause. The tickets are only $10. If you follow me on any of the various social media pages that I have, listen, man, I posted up the link. You know, just click the link. You know, get your tickets. Man, come on out. Have a good old time. Check it out. I'll be out there, probably be broadcasting live. Have a couple of guests come on the mic. You know, go ahead and, you know, we could talk it out, talk about whatever you need to talk about. I'm kind of, you know, I'm a renaissance man, so I could discuss anything. All right. Let's do some housekeeping for the network. Tomorrow night you have Professor Griff and Zaza Ali with Enemy Minds. On Saturday you had a fabulous Moonshine Brown with Anti-Robot Radio. Sunday you have Frequency Overload. You know, each week they have a new DJ every week playing all the music that you're not hearing in the mainstream. So check that out. That's on Sundays at 1 p.m. And on Monday you have Anti-Robot Rewind. So, you know, check those things out, man, all the different programming that we have on the network each and every Thursday. You know, you have your boy. You know I'm shooting it from the hip, giving it to you dead real, letting you know what you may have missed and what's transpiring out here in the world. And, of course, if you follow any of our social media pages, you know, we give you that good raw and uncut. And read the blog that I just posted. I posted it up this morning. It's the second in the series called of the Invisible series. It's called Invisible Acquisition, and let you know why the United States is in the Middle East. It has videos attached to it explaining what an economic hitman is. You know, everybody remember the movie The Jackal that featured Bruce Willis. Man, it's going to tell you what a jackal really is. It's going to break down why, you know, Gaddafi was on the prime minister of Libya, why he was killed. All that is broken down in that blog, so make sure you check it out. It's going to let you know why there's a need to have a central bank, all that kind of stuff. So check that blog out. It's a good read. It's very informative. Man, it's going to let you know that the United States has been a country since 1776. Man, the United States has been at war in some type of conflict for 218 years. Now, you think about, do the mathematician, from 2015 to 1776, we only been at peace 21 years since the United States has been established. So I encourage you to read that blog. It's a good read. Hey, man, about to take off, about to sign off. Ric Flair, take us out the door, man.
Whether you like it or don't like it, sit down and look at it because it's the best going today. Woo!
Hey, man, I'll see y'all next week, Thursday, regular time at 7 p.m. Again, I guess next week will be OG Clothing Line. OG Clothing Line out of the UK. We'll have a representative from the company come on, explain what they're doing across the UK, how they feel about the United States, you know, all the trials and tribulations they feeling, and what's the perception, you know, of all the turmoil that takes place here and abroad. So we're going to talk to them, and, you know, we'll probably be able to display some of the clothing, too, so follow us all throughout the week, and I'll probably post some of the clothing that they have, and you can probably order it if you would like. So that's what we'll have. We'll have them on next week, and we'll be back. So I'll talk to you next week. This is The Porch Reloaded. This is Brent Edwards. Hey, the revolution will not be televised, and we cannot begin without the information first. We are the change. Signing off. Talk to you next week.
You're now listening to A-Rod Music.